So, Joyce, welcome to Lead Tail TV. I'm so excited to have you here and talk about all kinds of things and really excited. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Brian. I'm super excited too.
Well, let's dive right in. Let's talk about a whole bunch of things. We've got a lineup and many questions to talk you through. The first one I want to talk about is just recruiting and how it's changed so dramatically over the years, especially recently, especially during the so-called Great Resignation. How do you think employers put their culture or front and center, their culture front and center as they seek to attract and retain talent during these times? What's your thoughts on that?
My thoughts are employer branding has changed so much, influenced by the pandemic. So if I think about when I first graduated college, it was in 2005. And if you had a ping pong table and an awesome 401k matching program, you had a bunch of candidates waiting for you, right? But then look, fast forward to 2022, we have this global pandemic. We have the Great Resignation. People are leaving their jobs for lots of probably very good reasons. And then I read this article in the New York Times a couple months ago, and they called it the age of anti-ambition. And all of this is somewhat personal for me because I left my job in 2020. I was part of the Great Resignation too. And I took a 10-month break. And I read this book. I even brought it. It's called Halftime by Bob Buford. Highly, highly recommend it because I view 2020 as my halftime. And halftime defined as a time to rest, to kind of reassess and rethink what are your big moves going to be for the next half of the game. And that's what I did for 10 months. And I felt like I really wanted to be very thoughtful and intentional around how I was going to spend my time. And I wanted to change the world in some way. And I feel like I think that's kind of where employer branding is going, to be more inspirational, to be more motivating, to speak more directly to individuals, to help them understand how their impact can really be much larger if they're willing to take risks. So I'll stop there. I said a lot.
No, that I mean it's so I there's so many things to so many different avenues to go down with what you just said. The first one I'd love to just even talk about is that this affected you. And I want to honor what you're able to talk about, but obviously it deeply touched you. And so I'd love to know what you took away from your time and what empowered you. I'd love to hear what you went through.
I came back with a very clear mind and very motivated to do something big. And so this is what the company I'm at today, Sirrah, is my third 3D printing startup. I'm a startup girl, a startup B2B marketer through and through. I think it is an honor and a privilege to help an inventor build their dream. And the bigger, the badder the dream, the better, because small dreams don't get funded. And I became so very excited and encouraged by Sirrah's mission. And I took a look at that and said, okay, we have really got to package this, package it in a way that's relatable, that we can communicate to candidates and build a hiring narrative, which is the center of our employer branding to help really access what I call the passive market. That's or people who are employed or on the sidelines and not really ready to engage. And my theory is there's a lot of A players out there that may not be looking, but we want to access them. And we do that through the hiring narrative. And I actually told, I was talking to one of our investors at Sirrah, and I told him, I was like, look, if we're successful with employer branding, we're going to reach mechanical engineers that work at Tesla, and they're going to say, I got this offer from Sirrah, and I want to seriously consider this. And it's going to be a hard decision for them to leave Tesla and join Sirrah. That's the point where we want to get to. And so coming back to that employer branding and why it's so meaningful to me is because there are so many exciting, innovative companies, startups that are doing things that will change the world. Climate tech, clean tech, manufacturing, where Syrah is based. And we just have to communicate in a meaningful way that that people could change the world if they're willing to take that risk and jump on board.
You know, and you use the words, I think, employer branding. When you talk about the brand of the company, it's such a fascinating thing, because you're creating the brand for the consumer, a brand for the customer. And you're talking about the brand for the employee. Talk me through how the brand and the employer brand are connected and yet different to the employee.
How we reach and the narrative that we create for the customer is different than the narrative we create for the candidate. The narrative for the customer is around the value proposition of what Syrah can do for them in terms of a business improvement. The narrative for the candidate is around what Syrah can do for them beyond a benefits package. It's all around company mission and what their involvement could be and how that could be impactful on a much larger scale.
Mm. I would imagine that it's a very handheld process, a very human process. When it gets to, when you're talking about a Tesla versus a Syrah, the differences between the two, are you looking at it as a complex versus a simple, or is it the same kind of process that between the two?
I think both are actually very humanistic.
Mm.
And employer branding is definitely a different kind. It's a different spin of humanistic, because when I talk about employer branding, what we're doing is basically I'm going to our existing employee base and saying, why are you here? And I'm trying to figure out what drew them here. How do they feel like their work is meaningful?
Yeah.
And then I'm trying to expose that to future candidates. I'm also trying to, there's a lot of people there that are also scared to work for a startup.
Mm.
And there's lots of people out there that are very excited to work for a startup like me. And so it's about making it tangible to them and making them understand that at a smaller company, your involvement will be bigger and with much greater reward than at a larger company. That's part of the narrative too.
Oh, that makes total sense. Yeah. So there's always barriers to get across. We don't know how the product is going to turn out. We don't know how the company is going to turn out. We don't know how the, but so what you're basically promising is a culture, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the, how is your lifestyle going to be? How is your day-to-day going to be? How is your enrichment going
to be? How will you be treated?
The environment. That's what you're really selling here. Is that right?
Yeah, that absolutely. I think culture is such an important part of it, and knowing the leadership team and how they operate is a big part of it. And then knowing how you're going to be treated is a big part of it. I think that's more important now more than ever. A lot of people want to be, no, they don't want to be another number, and they want to know how they're going to be seen and heard and acknowledged in the workplace. And so, you know, those are hard things to communicate and on a mass level. Those are hard things to promise too. And so the best way I know how to do that is just through employee advocacy, asking our existing employer base to really, you know, be candid about their experiences at Syrah. A lot of our new candidates are through referral, and that's probably for a reason. And then also to just broadening the marketing mix and thinking about how do we expose all of this, not just through digital assets, but through blogging. Through referrals. And so making those stories accessible to the market is really important.
Wow, what a fascinating process for anybody to now take, especially after talking about your own experience and what so many have gone through, then to come back and say, now I am empowered. So to pick one is a much deeper decision
mm-hmm.
than it used to be, because you know where I think it used to be is like, well, if this doesn't work, then I'll pick another one in a year or two. But now I think it's a much deeper decision, because I just took off in your case you know, a lot of time. And now when I pick one, it's got to be the, what I need this to be like a really meaningful thing here. And so I need to be convinced. It's almost like a buyer's market.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's definitely a candidate market out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think employers, we have to be a little bit smarter and wiser and more intentional.
So how does your personal experience, you know, of company culture impact how you build, cultivate, and, you know, even disseminate culture in your current role?
Because this is my third 3D printing startup, I've had, you know, a little bit of experience in terms of building culture. And I think it made me realize that employee advocacy is so important. It's so much more than a Glassdoor review. And it's really about creating that hiring narrative. So what brings somebody to a company is often very different than why they stay. And I think it's important to tell those two sides. I think it's also important to build employee ambassadors. There are definitely people out there that like to be mobilized, that like to be promoted and showcased. And so it's about finding them and doing exactly just that.
When you look at everything in its totality, the culture is what feeds all of that and what gets it to more efficiency, more time, more creativity, you know, everything that really makes it hum. Could you give an example of what, when you look at all of that, of something you're doing to build culture that helps those things to come together?
So I have a great example, and I didn't help build it, but I am helping promote it. So before I came to Syrah, there was a grassroots women-led organization called SOS, and it stands for Sisters of Syrah. So what's really cool is that being a manufacturing startup, you wouldn't think the female contingency was that high, but Syrah is actually over 25% female, which is awesome. I don't know what the benchmark is out there for other high-tech startups, but I bet you it's probably not 25%. And this is a group of women that meet on a biweekly basis, and it's basically peer support and to kind of just hear each other out and help each other out. And I thought that was such a magical thing. And so we've, you know, put that through our marketing machine and really using that as sort of an attraction to future female candidates to let them know that we take diversity very seriously. Mm-hmm. And there's a peer group that's here waiting to receive them. Those are golden nuggets for employer branding. And I think, you know, when it comes to corporate culture and employer branding, so much of it has defaulted to benefits in the past, right? So like the free lunches, the ping pong table, the beer keg, and those are great.
Yeah.
But then most people, I think a lot of people want to know, is this a mission I can really impact?
Yeah.
And then, okay, tell me about the 401k matching later.
Where do you think that connection with others comes in? Has that been strengthened? Has it not? Is it? Is there a stronger sense of community? And where do you see it even going?
So I think it is highly variable depending on industry and type of person. There's lots of people out there that are fine being sort of like a freelance contractor and not having that community or that in-person, you know, networking, and that's fine. I think what's important for Syrah, given the fact that we're trying to build our first factory in Boston right now, it takes a lot of community. It takes a lot of teamwork. It takes a lot of trust and communication. So that all has to be there in order for, you know, our factory to work, for everybody to come to work and feel motivated and that they can trust each other. So for us, given that most of our employees do work on site, I think that community is huge. And so we continue to host in-person events, you know, Taco Tuesday, Pizza Friday, all that kind of stuff. Cinco de Mayo is coming up on May 5th, and we have a huge party planned for that. It's so important to still have that camaraderie, because we want everyone to still come to work every day and feel motivated.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, there's been so much Zoom or Google Meet or WebEx or whatever, and companies are starting to reintroduce what's possible for everyone. And then in your position saying, you know, we support in-person, or we support work from home, or we support a variable. You've seen companies out there saying, we're welcoming everybody back. We're going to take everyone, and you're all by the end of this year, we're going to be back in the office, or, you know, 2 days a week is how we're all going to be. And it's just interesting to me to see how everyone is kind of defining or refining or not, and just saying, we're all going back. Do you have, based upon even just yourself, I don't know if it's where you sit in your career or even just yourself, and how you, even just in the last year, kind of felt your own pull, where do you think all that kind of sits?
Well, I know for me personally, I think it's really hard for me to envision myself back in an office every day. I have been remote for the last 5 years across all the people that I've worked for. And I love it. I love being a remote employee. And I think it forces me to be more intentional in my meetings. It's a balance of productivity and efficiency of a meeting versus also still checking in on your teammates and making sure everyone's doing okay. I've definitely been way more intentional about that. It's scheduling one-on-ones with my teammates.
Let's shift into another topic. I want to talk to you about yourself as a storyteller, because you are you describe yourself as a storyteller, and I want to see how you define storytelling. What does that mean in the context of marketing, and can you explain how it works in your current role?
So I define storytelling as creating an emotional reaction with your audience, such that it inspires them to take action. And that action doesn't have to be huge. The action could be they simply follow you, or they subscribe, or they download something, or they just simply have to react. That's how I define storytelling. So in how we communicate to our customers, I define it as we put the customer as the superhero of the story. It's all about them, less about Sarah, all about how they feel empowered, less about what our tech does. When I define storytelling for employer branding, it's about making our company mission relatable, such that they can see how they can easily impact it.
Wonderful. Yeah. I love that, you know, the one action that, you know, there's a storyline, and then there's a one thing at the end of this that we can all do on the front end of it. Can you think of a story that you're proud of that you have been involved with or created or co-created that describes what you're talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. So I joined Sarah six, seven months ago, and very quickly got to work in terms of taking them out of stealth mode. And so that required creating a completely new story, completely new narratives, from not talking about ourselves at all to all of a sudden opening the full kimono and saying, this is who we are, come join us. And I'm very proud of how we did that. I feel like we executed that very well, in terms of making our story relatable. So instead of, I'll give you an example. What a lot of other 3D printing companies in my space would say is, look at our 3D printer, it's the biggest, baddest, awesome, will you buy one? Right, okay. What Sarah says is, we wanna transform manufacturing for people and planet, will you join us? Mm-hmm. And that just felt like a lot easier for somebody to buy into, right? Rather than say, you want me to pay $1.5 million for a 3D printer, that's a lot of money. Versus, I just want you to join our company mission. Our company mission is, we want to reshore manufacturing. We want to bring back jobs. We want to bring back business and we want to decarbonize. If that sounds exciting to you, join us in some way. Subscribe, follow.
Yeah. One of the things that you have to think about in the startup world is differentiation. How do you go about positioning the company in the public mind, in the minds of potential employees as well?
Differentiation is the heart of marketing, isn't it? And how marketers go about it can sometimes be very confusing. And few are actually very good. I view it as it's less about, it's less about how the product is different, and it comes back to those bigger business challenges. How are we going to tackle those challenges in a different way? So if you think about back to the pandemic, 3D printing actually became sort of like a messiah solution in the sense that people were printing face masks out of their garage. And people were, 3D printing became very accessible during the pandemic. And that's great. But if you print face masks out of their garage, that's not really reshoring manufacturing, right? These are just one-offs. And so we talk about those business challenges of reshoring in a much different way on a much bigger scale. And that's how I think Sirrah differentiates, by disseminating the problem in a different way. And then also being very realistic that there's no single solution that's going to solve a very complex business challenge. It's going to take an ecosystem of partners and policymakers to come together. And I think by being very real, that's just better thought leadership altogether.
Who you are, and to capture that and to put it out there is the essence of what the reality is of that is often hard. I mean, it's so easy to capture a person, or easier than it is a brand or an entity. When you look at that entity, what's the first thing you would do to go capture that reality or that essence?
I think a lot of B2B marketers are confused in terms of what their role really is. Our role is not to get somebody to buy up front. Our role is to influence the buying cycle such that they ultimately will buy from us. But we need to create really good, valuable content to drive that influence journey. And so if you take that burden off of buy now, if you take that burden off of the marketing department and just say, be more thoughtful with your content creation and how we syndicate, promote, mobilize the entire marketing mix, that really allows marketers, I think just to be more thoughtful with how they execute. So I forgot what your question was, but that's the first thing that came to my mind is not buy now, it's influence.
Yeah. I'm curious about then how you believe in KPIs then, because taking that off the table creates a whole different way of working. And it's almost like you're saying engagement is, and I hope you're saying engagement is the way.
So my perspective on KPIs has evolved tremendously, having worked for, very large publicly listed Fortune 100 companies to now working at startups. KPIs are not static. And I want all B2B marketers to know this too. They are highly dependent on your company maturity. And they are very different depending on what you're actually selling. If you're selling SaaS, you're selling software licenses, and you're building a demand generation funnel, your KPIs are very different than someone like me working for a hardware startup. And I'm not selling systems. I'm actually selling capacity to print on our systems. Business model absolutely matters. Maturity also matters in terms of company maturity. So for a startup in our phase, you're totally right. Engagement and looking out for signals, positive signals of interest is far more important than going chasing after MQLs. So that MQL thing is a hamster wheel. Marketers will be chasing that forever. And there's a lot of comfort and vanity in MQLs. There is more meaning and more value in looking after buyer intent signals and piecing together a story for the executive team to understand how are people engaging, how are they being influenced by us, and then we follow them throughout their customer journey to see ultimately do they buy.
Oh, you know, the longer we talk, the more I just know we are going to get along for a long, long time. You're saying that that engagement is probably one of the keyest pieces, the key indicators. When you look at all of that and you start to assess your career really in all of those areas that I just named, how do you look at it as a conglomerate of sales enablement? How do you look at lead generation? How do you look at, you know, basically MQL and SQL and conversion and employee branding as one? How should that sit in an organization versus how it has in the past?
Yeah. What I've come to realize is that blanket advice is very damaging. So what I mean by that is there is no such thing as one size fits all. It, again, very highly depends on your business model and your company maturity and what kind of business you are, you know, who you sell to and all that kind of stuff. There's, I'll tell you one of my pet peeves. One of my pet peeves is when I go onto LinkedIn and I see people post like two sentences of marketing advice. And that will only work. Their advice will only be true to a very small segment of listeners, right? Because it is highly circumstantial what will work for you. And so when I look at, you know, Harvard Business Review or McKinsey, when they talk about best-in-class marketing organization structure, how you should have certain departments structured, who should report to who, should, for example, should marketing ever report to sales? Or should marketing report directly to the CEO? Or should marketing report to product management? There's no... Yes and no are both correct. Mm. It just depends. And that's what I've learned is that the answer is highly dependent on who you work for and where they are in their journey.
Mm. Yeah, the one thing that we all know is that the customer is doesn't care at the end of the day.
That's absolutely right. Yeah.
They just want one experience. So as long as they're having a consistent and great experience, if they're not, then something along all of those needs to be looked at.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would admit, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is going to be the toughest question of all, of every question I've just asked you, which is about your garden.
Yeah, I'm very proud of my garden.
Good, good. I am a gardener myself. And any tips on what you've learned so far, or just one or two?
Any tips? Oh man. I don't pretend to be an expert. I would say fertilizer is really important and watering constantly, especially where I'm at in Dallas. I go out there in my garden and I water three times a day because it's just so hot.
Yeah. I hear you on the soil. The soil makes a huge difference. I learned that the hard way in the mix and the different mixes that you can put into it. And there's a lot of ways that we could actually turn that into a business conversation, but I won't go there.
Yeah. Yeah. Fundamentals matter, huh?
Well, thank you so much, Joyce, for spending your time here on LeadTail TV and with me. Really appreciate it.
No, thank you. I had a lot of fun in this conversation too.
Wonderful. Well, we'll talk again soon. Cheers.
Okay. Thank you.